He says, but what we deny, and we are v'nachnu misnakim el Hashem imenu, and we proclaim our innocence before God from Amon Shin Nun Vav, if you're in that book. Hu amaymer b'shelo toshav hanefesh leguf li'olam. So he was talking about before. He said, he doesn't mind if people accuse him of certain things. It doesn't bother him. But this he will not, this he denies steadfastly. Certain things people say about him, he says, okay, even if they're wrong, I don't really care. No, it doesn't bother me. I'm not going to protest. But this, he says, I have to protest. That anyone who says about us that we said that the soul will not return to the body, vishalo yitokein heyoso, and it can't be, it shouldn't be, it cannot be. This denial, he says, the denial in the idea of Tchias HaMesim brings a person to denying miracles in general. And denying miracles, that is definitely a kfira in Torah. And it definitely is someone, that would definitely be a belief that removes a person from religion. And we'll go into this in a minute. And he says, and that's really the reason why we count Tchias HaMesim as one of the Yud Gimel Ikarim. Okay. So it's a very interesting thing, because it's a question, why does the Rambam count that? I mean, in the list of Yud Gimel Ikarim are fundamental ideas, you know, the existence of God, the Achdus of God, you know, Torah Min HaShamayim. These are fundamental things. So it seems out of place that a specific event should also be counted as a fundamental. I mean, the fundamentals should be things that are, you know, underlying all the particulars. So ideas about the existence of God, ideas about Torah, and those types of things are clearly make sense to say that that's a foundational concept. But the fact that there will be a resurrection of the dead, that just seems like a particular point. So the Rambam here is explaining to us, why did he pick something that seems to be a particular as a foundation, as a fundamental idea? And he's going to spend a lot of time on this later on. But basically he says it's not because of the idea itself per se. It's really for what it represents as a general idea. And really, it's what negating it would imply. I mean, it says like this, that really the Rambam is saying, what is the true ikkar that he's trying to express here? The ikkar is nisim. Now, why miracles? Why are miracles such a fundamental, why is that such a fundamental idea in Torah? So, I mean, you have to understand a little bit about the time that the Rambam was living in and the prevailing ideas that were in his day. And one of the basic, you know, one of the main concepts there was an idea of the eternal universe, right? Like Aristotle's concept. And that concept meant that God sort of was the cause, is the cause of the universe, but apart from it. Sort of like, it's God's existence brings into existence the universe, but God and the universe God doesn't really control you. Everything in the universe is the way it has to be, and it can't be otherwise. And that idea is against creation. If you really go back, Nisim really, the idea that God can do nisim is really part of our idea that God has total control over the entire Bria. And that's really part of the idea of creation. So sort of nisim nisim go with creation. And if you don't believe in nisim, then you're sort of going into a certain, you're at least, you're in a certain idea that God's power over the universe is limited, and you're into the Aristotle camp of the eternity of the universe. So the Rambam is saying like this: is that that we obviously, you read the Torah, we obviously, the foundation, I mean, without the idea that God intervenes in nature for the sake of man, we wouldn't have, Har Sinai, we wouldn't have, anything to base anything on. So that definitely is a fundamental idea that God's, but it's more than just, I want to make it clear, it's more than just a practical thing. It's also it's also tied to our idea of God. That God is beyond, above and beyond the physical, and really the cause, and the mamtzi kol nimtzi, we say, his existence is really what brings into all, what really gives all other existence reality, and it's his will and his chachma that dictate the way things are. So that can be that is in his control.
Is that
Malchus? Is that Malchus? That's a good question. Is that Malchus? I don't know if that's exactly. Mean control?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know if I would limit it to one particular thing. Yeah.
And the Rambam puts Malchus with Yichud Hashem.
With Yichud, you say Shema Yisrael Hashem Echad. Right. Malchus is when we recognize that God is the sole dominion over the universe.
Malchus would imply that there's a kingdom to be,
there's
a relationship.
Right. Right. It's true. That's true. But so therefore the Rambam says, why do we represent Tchias, why do we pick Tchias HaMesim really as a representative of the class of Nisim? And the Rambam will explain later. It's the most far-reaching miracle that's possible. It's the greatest. It requires a belief in Tchias HaMesim, let's put it this way, means a complete belief, a belief in God's complete control over all of nature. And if a person were to deny Tchias HaMesim, he would have to be saying, I don't believe God really can control nature to that degree, to put a soul back into a deceased, into a body that disintegrated. It's a very interesting thing, but the Rambam emphasizes again: we have nothing in our works that deny that the soul returns to the body. On the contrary, we have statements that indicate that. And whoever decides, whoever wants to say about us that we don't believe this, and he has to twist our words, they'd have to say, oh, the Rambam over here doesn't really mean what he's saying literally. You know how people do things like that. He says that person ultimately will be judged, and he will have the evil judgment of someone who's choshed b'ksherim. It's funny how he just calls them a choshed b'ksherim. I mean, it's more. It seems more than just a choshed b'ksherim. It's like guys, laz. Not just a choshed. Ram is being maybe generous, I don't know. Okay, anyway. Now, it's like this. It's not possible for a person to make a mistake after this explanation and to say that we believe that every time it says in the Torah, Psukim, in Tanakh, about Tchias HaMesim, that it's a mashal. He says, but there are some of them that are literally true. Like we said. And there are some of them that are definitely an allegory. And some of them we're not sure about, whether they're an allegory or literal. But, he says, when you look in everything that the sages have explained, and the ones who explain Tanakh, the Andalusian scholars, apparently he was very, he held very highly from them. And if you look in the psukim, you have to look, you have to use a little bit of your sense over here. In the psukim, what the psukim are saying before and after those cases, you'll be able to understand. It's not my point, the Rambam says over here, to go through a list of every pasuk and identify it. Mashal, truth, suffix, okay. He says, because, and this is a very important point, he says, it doesn't add to the truth of anything to repeat it. Doesn't make something more true because it's repeated many times. He says, for instance, and it doesn't make it any less true if it's not repeated at all. So for instance, says, what is the most important idea in Torah? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And it's never repeated, it's just said that one time. And once we see the Navi, he quoted earlier in the book, a pasuk that he says is absolutely impossible to interpret as an allegory. So he says, once we see the Navi says in one place a statement that cannot be explained away as a mashal, that definitely the nefesh will return to the body, the soul will return to the body. We already have our proof from the Navi. We already have a clear statement of information from the Navi. And it doesn't help us to now go ahead and make every other statement about Tchiyas HaMesim. It doesn't make it any more true to keep saying more statements about it. It doesn't make it less true to say that the rest of them are mashal. No, the point is, like I was saying, a lot of times people make a mistake and they think that once they're trying to establish Tchiyas HaMesim, now they have an obligation to take every pasuk and try to say it's literal. Or if they think something is a mashal, so the Rambam saying, like he's saying, look, don't go overboard here. All we need is proof from the Navi that there's Tchiyas HaMesim. So as long as there's one pasuk that says it clearly, that's our proof. That doesn't mean now every other time a pasuk talks about Tchiyas HaMesim, we have to insist that it's literal. By what reason should we do that? It doesn't make, once we know something is true by one pasuk, it doesn't make it any more true to keep saying every other pasuk is literal. And it wouldn't make it less true to say every other pasuk is a mashal. So you have to use your chachma. There's nothing wrong with saying that sometimes Tchiyas HaMesim is said for its literal content, and sometimes it's an allegory for something else. So the bottom line is, the Navi said it, whether it's once or many times, and our Chacham have mentioned it, and it's a widely held and known idea that there is definitely a return of the soul to the body. And that's the end of the story. No one should ever accuse the Rambam again of not believing Tchiyas HaMesim. Okay? All right. Yeah. You want to get me? Okay. So the Rambam says also, he says another thing that led people to believe this about the Rambam is that he says like this. He says, don't think that the Mashiach has to do a miracle, okay, in order to establish himself, or that the Mashiach will change nature, or that the Mashiach will bring the dead back to life. This is what the Rambam says in Hilchos Malachim. Okay, he says that's not a requirement of the Melech HaMashiach. Got it there? That's good. The Melech HaMashiach, what's that?
Can't go wrong.
Can't go wrong with that one, right?
Unless you want to drive it.
Yes, in the very end, Ram says, in the very end of the Yad HaChazaka, he talks about the Mashiach, and he says basically, right? Al yalel daitcha shemelcha Mashiach tzorach leasos osos amovsim u'mechadish dvarim ba'olam u'mechaya meisim kiyotzei b'dvarim elu shehatipshim omrim. He leaves that out in this part. So none of these things are necessary. Ain a davar kein. He says, because Rabbi Akiva thought that Bar Kochba was possibly the Mashiach. And once he was killed in his sins, then it says he knew he wasn't. Okay? But he never asked of him a miracle. So in other words, the Mashiach is this. Really, the Mashiach is the person that brings back the true ideas of Torah and Hashem to the world, and defeats the other ideologies. And it's not a matter of miracles. It's a matter of education in a certain sense. Okay. So like the Ram says, he says, Ikar HaDvarim Kochahein. This is the heart of the matter. In our Torah, Sha Torah Zos, Ein Chukeha U'Mishpoteha Mishtanim Li'olam U'Li'olamei Olamim. The Torah doesn't change. Okay. He's like this. If someone comes along and he's a king from the house of David, and he's well versed in Torah, and he's dedicated to mitzvos like David, and he follows the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebalpeh, the written and the oral law, and he convinces all of the Jews to go with him and to fight the Milchamos Hashem, the wars of God, then he is considered to be the Mashiach. He has the chazaka of being the Mashiach. We assume he's the Mashiach because he's succeeding. And if he does this and does succeed and is victorious over the nations around him, and he builds the Beis HaMikdash, and he gathers in all of the exiled Jews, then we know for sure he's the Mashiach. And if he doesn't succeed, or he's killed, then we know he's not. He's not the one that the Torah promised. Okay, and then he goes into... the point over here he's trying to make is that he says over here that the Mashiach doesn't have to bring back, doesn't have to do Tchiyas HaMeisim. So people again thought he's saying, oh, Tchiyas HaMeisim is not really true. He says no. That's not what I was saying over here. All I was saying over here was that for the Mashiach to establish himself, it's not something that he has to do. He doesn't have to do a miracle. He doesn't have to split the sea. He doesn't have to do something to establish himself. Why? Because he already was. He already was spoken about by Nevi'im from before. In other words, if a person would come along and say he's something new, a new Navi, and establish a new concept, so then he would have to have a proof for it. But we already have in the Navi that there will be the Mashiach. So, and the Navi already tells us what the criteria are. So whoever comes along and fulfills those criteria, then he's the one that the Navi already spoke about. So we don't need a new... You don't need someone to make a new miracle to establish himself as a Navi. He just has to fulfill the demands that were already laid out from before.
Can a Mashiach kind of... does he have like a potential, and can he like fail his potential?
Absolutely. That's what the Rambam says about Bar Kochba, that Rabbi Akiva thought he was the Mashiach. He thought he was the Mashiach, and he says, and once he failed, he realized, and he says he failed, and the Rambam says very very tellingly, he says he died, but not just that he died, right? He said he died in his sins. He died in his sins. The implication is, if he wouldn't have sinned and he wouldn't have died, he could have gone on to become the Mashiach. There's no preordained Mashiach waiting somewhere to be released. You know, it's not like... like everything else in Torah, the Mashiach has to be a self-made man to some degree, because everybody has to use their own bechira, their own choice, their own knowledge, and make the decisions that are rational. It might sound easy, but we all know it's not. So,
but it's at least half preordained, because he has to come from the house of David, right? So, I mean, it's
correct. Not everybody can be the Mashiach, because he has to be a king.
But it's open to anybody who is of the house.
That's correct. That's correct. That's a very good point. Correct. So he says, so all we were saying over there was the Mashiach doesn't have to do that, but we weren't saying that there's no Tchias HaMeisim. Okay, fine. All right, now let's go into a little bit of a more interesting topic. Now, he's like this. Another thing that misled people was this famous pasuk over here. The pasuk says, the Rambam says about Mashiach again, he says, don't think that in the days of the Mashiach, anything in nature will be changed. There'll be nothing new there'll be no chiddush in Maisa Brachos. The world will go on as it always has. Olam kimin hago holech. We're not going to have new realities, okay? So what does it mean when it says in Yeshaya, in Isaiah, it says, v'gor ze'ev im keves, v'nomer im gedi yerbats, that the wolf will lie down with the sheep, right? And the nomer, was it the leopard, will frolic with the goats, right? You ever see that picture? And then the child will lead them all, right? You ever see that picture? And so he says, so that sounds like a real change in nature. That sounds like a change in nature. So the Rambam says, no, that's a mashal. That's a mashal. And what does it mean? It means simply that the Jews will be able to live in safety with their old enemies who are likened to the ze'ev, to the wolf and the leopard. In other words, they're likened to the animals that tear apart prey. That's the enemies of Israel. And the Jews are a marshal of the keves and the gedi. So it means they'll live together. There won't be any more conflict.
Could the Mashiach, could he improve the existing reality? Kind of like it's a stupid example, like with the
technology,
impending climate change crisis and stuff like that. Can he actually, like, if stuff were to go down, can he, you know?
I think we would have to say that the Rambam says he'll be a tremendous chacham, and he'll probably be able to solve our energy problems.
Well,
so. Be a tremendous chacham, and you know, what are they working on? Cold fusion? Maybe he'll be able to figure that one out. But we'll finish. We'll pick up with that in a second. So he says like this. So the Rambam says that there'll be no change in nature, and when it says that the lion, that the lamb will lie down with the wolf, is a mashal. He says, but that's not something that we said. This is not a chiddush that the Rambam says he came up with. The Andalusians already beat him to it. Okay? And he says, but just take a look, he says. Take a look at what the pasuk says. This is what he was talking about before. You got to look at the pasuk. You can't just pull a quote out of a pasuk. You got to look at it before, you got to look at it after, you got to look at the context. It says, v'lo ye'ra'u v'lo yashchisu b'har b'chol har kachi. There'll be no violence, no damage, no harm in my mountain, in Yerushalayim. Ki molo ha'aretz deya es Hashem. Because the whole world will be filled with the knowledge of God. So it says, the lion, the wolf will lie down with the sheep. The leopard will lie down, will frolic with the goats. There'll be no harm in Yerushalayim because the whole world will be filled with the knowledge of God. He says, now, what do you think? It already says in the pasuk. It says, why will there be no harm? It says it in the pasuk. It gives you the reason. It says, because Mola kol ha'aretz deya es Hashem. The whole world will be filled. The whole land will be filled with the knowledge of God. That's why there'll be no harm. Okay? So he says, so what do you think? What do you think? Do you think that there's going to be some change in nature? Do you think that it's describing an actual change, that the lion is not going to eat the sheep anymore? But it tells you the reason. It says, because the world will be filled with knowledge. So what are you going to say? You're going to say, up till now, why is the lion eating the antelope? Because he's a sinner. The lion is a rebellious creature. He doesn't know God. That's why he attacks the antelope. But once Mashiach comes, he'll learn the truth about God and he'll eat wheat. He says, that's ridiculous. He says, it's obvious that the pasuk is not a literal description. Because how could you say, in a literal sense, there'll be no more animals of prey because the whole world will be filled with the knowledge of God? The knowledge of God is not something that the animal is lacking right now that's making him into an animal of prey. It's his nature. So obviously the whole pasuk is just a mushel. It's an allegory. And it's using, you know, animals that are you know, hunters and the killers as a marshal for the other nations, and the docile animals is a marshal for Klal Yisrael. And it's telling us that in the times of Mashiach, all of that hatred will be removed and all of that conflict will be removed because everybody will share in the true knowledge. And really what's causing the hatred today and the aggression and the violence is a lack of recognition of truth. So that's an idea that makes sense in the pasuk. But to interpret it literally, he says that doesn't make any sense. He says, and that's really like the Navi says, that Nevuah will become like a closed book. He says, that's a fulfillment of that prophecy, that people will not be able to interpret things anymore. They'll be on such a low level of wisdom that they're going to look at a statement like this and just interpret it literally. When it's very on its face, it says, Darshuni. It says, explain me. Can't be that the animals are going to stop doing that because of Das. And this is something explained in many places, and that's the Gemara, basically. The Gemara says, Ein Bein Yemosa Mashiach. We say there's no difference between now and Yemosa Mashiach. The only difference is Shibud Malchus Bovad. In the days of Mashiach, we won't be subject to the rule of other nations. But in terms of laws, natural laws, it's not going to be a new era of natural laws. Now, it's true, the Gemara does say that things will be very easy then. The Gemara says that clothes will grow off of trees and all different kinds of things like that. But the Rambam says that also is a mashal. It means things will be produced with ease. And the Rambam says, his opinion is, that we'll be able to live a very stress-free life, because the fact that things are available easily and we're not running after excess because we'll be more involved in what's real and what's true, so then stress will be removed. And the Rambam says it wouldn't be strange to him if people could live hundreds of years if they had an absolutely stress-free life. So that's his opinion. I mean, it's possible, he says, that the life expectancy, stress is definitely a big killer. And the Rambam was a doctor, okay, albeit a medieval doctor, but they were good observers of the human condition, and he felt that it's not far-fetched to say that if your needs are available, readily available, and you're not stressing over getting more, then your health will be very good and your longevity will be extended. Yes, Amy? Will Chazal say in the time of Mashiach, there's a moshel, they say the orlas alev will be removed. You know, like the epicardium. The orlas alev. The orlas alev is a moshel. It means the lave is like a moshel, the heart is like a moshel for the seat of desire. And the orlas alev, well, sometimes the heart is also thinking. But the orla slave means it to be like there's like a covering over it, like a meaning to say that the emotions are very powerful now, and it's hard to see the truth. I mean, the truth of the matter, the reality is in Torah, we really believe, I think, that to the degree somebody really perceives the truth, they cannot go against it. And it's the emotions that cloud us from seeing the truth. And if a person really were to know what he is, what his nature is, what's really good for him, and what his ultimate existence is, and what his ultimate demise would be if he lives like you know, the wrong way, we think that it's really not possible to do something against your own selfish interests. We're basically, bottom line, people are, you know, we're in favor of living in your own selfish interests. The only thing is, you have to realize what your true interests are. That's what's hard. You know, it feels good to do certain things, and you're swayed by the emotion to say, well, this is going to be good for me. You know, but if you could see clearly, for instance, you know, that's what they try to do now with, like, cigarettes. That's what they're trying to do, like trying to make it really clear, you know, what your lungs will look like when you smoke that cigarette. I mean, they have that belief. I don't know if they're very successful at it or not. But the reason they're not successful is because there's such a strong ability of a person to just push out reality from his mind, just push it away, just not think about it, you know, just grab on to the immediate benefit that he thinks he's getting out of it, and say, I'm not going to worry about it. That's not going to be me, you know. But if you really knew it for sure, and you really understood it, it's something that you wouldn't do. But the other thing is, what pulls you away also is a whole false system of value. You know what I mean? Like, there's a whole system of value that's completely false. And that's really what people get taken in by. Like in America, you know, there's a certain false value of fame. Just to be known. I mean, you know, and with the advent of all these little social media, it's very easy to people who just get very sucked into that. And, you know, you really analyze it. What's the benefit if other people know you to you? What the benefit is that? I mean, the whole thing is silly, but a lot of people are making major life decisions based on a value that they haven't really thought through, but emotionally just seems right. Like, yeah, I want to be famous, of course. Do I have to explain that to anybody? You know? And I'm going to sacrifice and do all of this. So that's Orlas Alev. That's like a big film over your perception of reality. It distorts your perception of reality, and it really just drives you to crazy decisions. So in the time of Mashiach, the true reality will be so clear, you know, that Orlas Alev will evaporate. It's sort of like, just give a quick mashal. So like, it's like if a person, you know, it shouldn't happen to anybody, but a person sometimes gets very sick. I mean, I've had this, I know somebody like this. They became very ill and had just a tremendous epiphany, you know, like I just realized what is really valuable in life and, you know, he recognized that he was wasting his time, and I realized how short life is, and, you know, I mean, you sort of like realize what is really important. Now, what's difficult though is to maintain that when you get well, and the truth is, that individual, I know personally, he had a tremendous recognition of this. When he did recover, you know, he went back. But that's because you can't not face that reality when you're in the hospital bed like that. You can't push it off anymore. That's like the Gemara says, it's like Gemara gives a mashal, says like a chola, it's like he has the Shekhinah on top of him. Right? Shekhinah is like the representation of some physical manifestation of God's reality. So a person who is really very, very ill has that before him constantly. He himself is basically a representation of what is really true. And he realizes his body is withering and, you know, his family is with him. And he realizes what the money is not going to help him anymore. He realizes what's important in his life. So, but you know, that's the ability, the man has a tremendous ability to just push these thoughts out at the first opportunity. So when he gets back on his feet, you know. Now this is the important part. This is the part that's important. He says like this. He says, when I say this is a mushel, he says, I don't know this for sure. I'm not saying this for sure. I don't have any special mesorah that says this pasuk is definitely a mushel. I don't have any nevuah that says this pasuk is a mushel. I don't have a specific Kabbalah about this. He says, but what brings us to say it's a mushel? Well, as follows, he says. He says, the striving, our striving, and the striving of every intelligent person is the opposite of the striving of the multitude, the strivings of the masses. He says, the masses, the hamon, the average person, even of the Torah community, they are interested in things that make the Torah and wisdom opposites. They look for things that are fantastic and seem to be out of line with nature. And they run away from the idea of natural order. Okay, not just in the past, and not just in the not in the present, and not in the future. Okay, he says, but we have a different striving. Our striving is to bring wisdom and Torah together, and we try to explain how things in the Torah work according to wisdom and are in line with reason and are in line with knowledge. And unless we can, and if we read a pasuk and we have no way to explain it at all, then we have to say it's an ace. Okay? But the point is like this. This is something we should really think about, because it's really, I mean, the Rambam is drawing a line in the sand over here, saying this is the fork in the road. He says, most people take the direction that there's Torah and then there's science. I mean, today we would say something like that, right? And to the degree that it's natural and scientific, it's not part of Torah. To the degree that it's Torah, it should be something fantastic. So that's their opinion. That's what they're looking for. That's what they're attracted to. So when they read a pasuk and it says the lion is going to play with the sheep, they leap to that in a literal sense. It captivates them. It says, yeah, that's Torah. That's the greatness of Torah. That when the Mashiach comes, the lion is going to start eating wheat and not going to be... He says, but we, on the contrary, he says, we try to say that, no, the Torah is really speaking in the language of wisdom itself. And the Torah is really something that is to appeal to human, to a person's intelligence. Shouldn't be that a person has to deny knowledge to attach himself to Torah. So when we read a pasuk, we read it very differently. When they read a pasuk, they look for what amazing supernatural thing can I find in the Torah. We look at it and we see what truth, what knowledge, what can we gain from learning, what intelligent ideas can we gain from the Torah. It really is, you know, a very, very different blueprint of what Torah is. Is Torah like some, you know, is Torah like an idea? I mean, what I really like to do is like to see if we can think a little more deeply into it and see what leads to this idea. But basically, you know, do you think that Torah is like a not really sure. Basically, you commit to something, you commit to the Torah, and for that, wonders will befall you. You understand? The Torah is sort of like the bargain here. The bargain is, you commit, you put your full belief into it, against all sense, right? And here's what we promise the big payoff is going to be, this amazing, wild realities are going to be opened up to you, and you're going to witness amazing things, and you know, like a world of magic will be yours, right? Or do we say that the Torah is given to man as he is, for man to become better, like we were discussing before? It's given as a tool to improve man himself, and therefore the improvement of man we know is in his knowledge and in his ideas. And the promise of Torah is that if you want to gain in knowledge and you want to understand more, the Torah is the way to help you develop into a person that really has a greater grasp of reality. And therefore, the essential content we're looking for are those ideas. See, for them, they're not looking for any more ideas because they don't believe that there's an idea system. They think it's all now, they're looking for the, what are we going to get out of this? We already did everything, we committed, we're in. We're all in. Now, what are we going to read about? Well, we're going to read about the great promises that there is, because there's nothing really more for us to do, right? So all of the Nevi'im must just be more elaborate stories of what we're going to get out of this. As opposed to the Rambam's way is, the commitment really is that we're going to look to improve ourselves and improve our ideas, and the Torah is a book that helps us improve this. So now when we're looking through it, we're looking for, let's see a new idea. How can we help him? How can we work on ourselves? What is this pasuk gonna teach me? You understand? When we read the Navi, we read the Chumash, we read the Psukim, we're looking for ways that we can really dig in and really get and really do what we, you know, what the Torah is all about, which is learning and teaching. And we don't really look at it in terms of what is it, in terms of, you know, some sort of fantastic type of stories in that sense. That's what he's saying. We're always looking on the contrary. We're looking, like he says, the Ram says it the best. Lekabetz, he says, v'nachnu nishtadel, we strive, lekabetz bein ha-Torah v'ha-musko, to put them together, to join the Torah and knowledge. And we always try to explain things in the sensible way, unless we're forced. That's why he said before, there's only one pasuk that we know for sure. There's one pasuk he says that definitely has to be literal, because there's no, it's just a simple statement of what will be. And but a pasuk like this, we try to see an idea from it. Now the Rambam just says one thing, we'll stop over here. He says it is possible that this is describing a miracle. He says it's possible that in Yerushalayim itself, there'll be a special nes that there won't be any type of predators. But that would just be like a limited kind of a thing, just to demonstrate the idea that we're all living properly, and Yerushalayim is the model of that. So there'll be a nes that there shouldn't be any lions killing any antelopes on Har HaBayis. But certainly there'll be no, it's not describing a widespread change of dietary habits of the large cats. Okay, but basically he says, Sof Davar, he says, we don't really know how these things are going to, Sof Davar's point, he says, Kol Eluheim Dvarim She'enon Pinos HaTorah. He says, these little details are not Ikarim in the Torah. And we don't really care what a person believes about it. Okay. We'll have to wait and see. But basically, basically is what we were discussing before. These types of things are details. If a person says, I am convinced that the lion won't eat anything but wheat, okay, it's not a big deal. And if a person is, that's not an ikkar, that's not a foundation, that's a particular. So he says, on those types of things, we'll wait and see. But like I said before, tchias ha-mesim is different. Although that's a particular event, it's, if a person were to deny it, that would be an indication of his denial of widespread of nisim in general. But for a person to say, I think this is a mashal, that's because of the pasuk itself. Okay. Okay, let's stop here.